Hello and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. This week, Vayigash. This week, Neiman Novetzky discusses Vayigash. Neiman Novetzky is a member of the Pardes faculty. And now, Neiman Novetzky.
Thank you, Larry. Parshat Vayigash records a dramatic end to the saga of Yosef and his brothers. As Yehuda pleads for Binyamin, Yosef reveals himself to the brothers, and they reunite. The riveting drama tends to overshadow the other more mundane parts of the parsha, which are often little learned. So today, instead of focusing on the stories of the brothers, I wanted to focus on the last section of the parsha. It talks about Yosef's economic policies, a topic which might seem to be somewhat technical, but actually raises significant questions and actually affects a read not only of this story, but of the opening of Sefer Shmot. The text shares a story of how, due to famine, the Egyptians are slowly impoverished. Yosef first takes the Egyptians' money in return for food. When that runs out, he takes their cattle, until finally they offer themselves as slaves. He then takes all of their land for Paro and makes a tax that what 1/5 of all future produce will go to Paro. And finally, he displaces the people from their cities. The narrative raises several questions, not least of which is the reason for its inclusion in Tanakh at all. What purpose does the story hold for the reader? Why does Torah, which is so normally sparse in its language, why does it decide to expound on Egyptian economics? Why do we care? Second, we must question Yosef's economic policies. His measures seem unusually harsh. If the people had earlier given of their food during the 7 years of prosperity, then why is it that they have to go and pay for food right now? Were such draconian measures really necessary? Second, how would he understand the policy of population displacement? What purpose was that supposed to serve? Finally, the episode includes several details which are mentioned more than once in the narrative, making us wonder to the import of such details. Amongst these is the fact that when the text mentions the impoverishment of the Egyptian, it simultaneously tells us three times how in Canaan too there was poverty. Why does the text highlight this? What's the relevance of the poverty in Canaan to what's going on in Egypt? Second, the story is framed by details of Yosef's family settling and proliferating in Goshen. Again, we wonder, what's the connection between this detail and the story of the Egyptians? Why are the two facts juxtaposed? Finally, twice we are told in this small unit that the priests were not included in the decree to sell land. And we have to ask again, why is this two-time mention necessary? So what we're going to do in the next few minutes is look at several different approaches to this story, trying to understand what Tanakh is trying to teach the reader in sharing it. The vast majority of exegetes point to our story and say its purpose is to reveal positive attributes of Yosef, to demonstrate his wisdom in dealing with a financial crisis, and to show us how he was so concerned for his family's welfare. The different Mefarshim go about this in different ways. Some focus on Yosef's concern for his family. Thus, Rashi suggests that Yosef's policy of population displacement was meant to ease the difficulties inherent in his own family's immigration. Since the entire country had similarly been displaced, the Israelites did not stand out. The Netziv adds a point. He says that the policy cleared Goshen of its inhabitants, providing Yosef's family with an isolated area in which to live, so that he can reduce the effects of potential assimilation. Others focus more on Yosef's economic policies, suggesting that Yosef recognized in his wisdom that austerity measures were necessary to ensure an adequate food supply without the raiding, corruption, and anarchy which often accompanies the stress of famine. Yosef's policies were not overly harsh, just simply necessary. And in addition, they say, Yosef tried to ease the necessary hardships in several ways. Thus, Rav Shmuel ben Chafni Gaon suggests that Yosef offered to buy the Egyptians' cattle not just as a price for food, but so they would no longer have to feed them. In addition, Ramban points out that even though the people offered themselves as slaves, we never see in the text that Yosef actually accepted their offer. And in truth, Yosef only bought their land, not their bodies. In addition, many commentators suggest that the story tries to highlight Yosef's honesty and loyalty to Paro. The verses emphasize that, Ve'aveh Yosef et ha'kesef beta Paro, Yosef brought the money to the house of Paro, underscoring that he took nothing for himself. Everything Yosef did was intended solely for the benefit of the king, not for his own enrichment. In addition, Ramban attempts to explain that when Yosef initially gathered food during the years of plenty, he did so by buying it up, not by expropriating it by a royal fiat. Thus, Yosef wasn't charging the Egyptians exorbitant prices for food which was rightfully theirs. Rather, Yosef emerges as a shrewd entrepreneur, buying low when the market was inundated with produce and selling at a high profit margin when supplies were limited. Once again, Yosef reveals his economic wisdom. Finally, how to explain the dual mention of priestly exemptions. Rabag suggests that actually the word Kohanim here should not be understood as cultic priests, but rather as important officers. Elsewhere, too, the word is sometimes used in that language. And so he says, what was the point? The exemption was an effort, he says, to keep the elite pleased so as to prevent rebellion. Once again, Rabag suggests, this is another example of Yosef's wise strategies. So one way of reading our story is that the entire point of this little passage is to go and laud Yosef for his wisdom and his concern for his family. Interestingly, however, it's important to note that there's one exception to this traditional approach, that of Rav Yosef Bechorshur. He reads the very same actions, but from an opposite perspective. He suggests that actually Yosef's policies were overly harsh, and his favoritism to his family wasn't a positive thing, but rather something that backfired. And in fact, all of this together paved the way for the future enslavement of Am Yisrael. Rav Yosef Bechorshur's approach has been taken by many modern commentaries as well, who elaborate upon it in several different ways. To begin with, they point out, what are the different things that Yosef did to the Egyptians that led to resentment? So first of all, the enslavement. Enslaving the Egyptian populace naturally bred resentment, and not surprisingly, perhaps later on, led to their desire to do the very same to Israel. Second, they suggest that actually, when Yosef had gathered the food during the years of plenty, he had done so without compensating the Egyptian farmers. And if so, being forced to pay for what had originally belonged to them might easily have led to bitterness on the part of the Egyptians. Some modern commentators try to suggest that the juxtaposition of the description of what's going on to the Israelites in Goshen and what's going on to the Egyptians serves to highlight the fact that this is what caused resentment. Thus, we read that how Yosef provided food for his family so they would have, quote-unquote, lechem lefitaf. At the same time, though, in Egypt, there was no bread. V'lechem ein b'chol ha'aretz. The story is framed by telling us how there was a giving of an achuzah, a settlement, to Yaakov and his sons. They were able to settle comfortably in Goshen. In contrast, though, the main section of the story describes how the Egyptians lose their ownership of the land. In essence, the foreigners become settlers, while the original settlers become foreigners. Finally, Yosef's family bring their cattle with them and are provided with grazing land in addition to food. The Egyptians, in contrast, are all forced to sell their cattle to Yosef so as to acquire food for themselves. It is specifically these contrasts between the Egyptians and the Israelites, not just the Egyptians having to suffer, but the fact that while they suffered, the Israelites did not, that eventually caused them to look back on Am Yisrael in a very negative light. So how do we evaluate Yosef's actions and his favoritism of his brothers? Some assume that actually this was just an error in judgment rather than a flaw in character. Yosef's intentions had been good, but he messed up. His actions led to resentment and, moreover, set a precedent for a totalitarian society in which national bondage is tolerated, thus paving the way for the Israelite enslavement. Others, though, view Yosef more negatively. David Sabato points to several leader commandments that stand in opposition to Yosef's actions, suggesting that the Torah questions their morality. Thus, he says, while Yosef worked to give Paro total control over the land, in the Pasuk it says, "Vatihi ha'aretz leParo," the Torah tells us that land can never be sold permanently, for it belongs to Hashem, quote-unquote, "Kili kol ha'aretz." The Egyptian people became avadim leParo, While the Torah emphasizes Hashem's role in freeing the children of Israel, forbidding eternal violence to another human because ki avadai him. Third, whereas the priestly exemption allowed them to maintain the land, Israelite priests are not given an inheritance at all. They're not above the people, but meant to serve the public. Finally, Yosef commands the people to give a fifth of their produce to Paro, to remind them that all that they eat really belongs to him. The Torah, instead, commands the nation to tithe for Hashem and his servants, to remind that all stems from God. Looking at these contrasts in the commandments that we have in the Torah with how Yosef acts leads David Sabata to suggest that actually this was not just an error on the part of Yosef, but something that should be seen more like a sin, something that Yosef himself perhaps should have known was wrong. I wanted to look at one last approach, which doesn't focus so much on the economic policies of Yosef as far as whether it be a good or a bad decision, as much as seeing that these economic policies are written in Tanakh in order to highlight the harshness of the famine. The entire passage, according to this approach, comes just to teach us how much the people were suffering due to famine. There was no food in Egypt to the extent that everyone had to go and give of their selves, their lands, their cattle, their money in order to eat. The position focuses, though, not just on the Egyptians, but on the threefold mention of Canaan's shared impoverishment. Between verses 13 to 15, we see this time and time again, that not only did the Egyptians suffer, but apparently Canaan was affected by famine as well. Just as Egypt was devastated, so too were the surrounding countries. And it seems, perhaps, that even after the famine, Canaan was likely in ruins with a collapsed economy. We still must ask, of course, so what? Why do we care? And what this approach suggests is that it's dafka, the harsh conditions of the famine, which explain to us why Yaakov's family didn't simply return to Canaan immediately, but rather remained on foreign soil. According to this approach, had it not been for the economic situation, the family might have returned to Israel immediately after the famine. Only because there was nothing to which to return did they remain in Egypt longer. This, of course, changed the course of the entire Israelite history. Had they gone back, there would not have been an Egyptian bondage. Due to the devastation around them, they decided to stay, and that's what led to the possibility of being enslaved. So what we've seen here is three very different approaches to this story. What seems like a mundane list of facts that has nothing to do with Am Yisrael turns out perhaps to have an awful lot to do with the fate of our nation. Either the story is simply coming to tell us of the wisdom of Yosef, to laud him in his concern for his family and for his wise economic policies, which led to the Egyptians being able to have food. Or the story is coming as the backdrop for the stories about to be read in Sefer Shmot, telling us the background to the Egyptian bondage. This is split into two different ways of reading it. Either that Yosef's economic policies actually caused, to some extent at least, the bondage, his favoritism towards his family, at the same time his draconian measures against the Egyptian population, bred resentment, which later was taken out upon the Israelites that were left in Egypt. Second, the very fact of the famine and the devastation that accompanied it, not only in Egypt but also in Canaan, led to the brothers' decisions to stay put in Egypt, whereas otherwise they might have gone back to Canaan, averting, again, the enslavement. So with that, I wish you a Shabbat Shalom and hope that you enjoyed the second part of this Parsha and not just the first.
Thank you, Neema. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you on the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.